Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Floor on Friday, the 15th of February, recording at 8:42 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. In terms of global stock market activity, well, we had more ranging, not surprisingly. The Asian markets mostly want to go up. Really, the last 3 days, we've seen some good rallies in some of those markets, such as India, and they had started today, interestingly, following Wall Street's sell-off last night. They had started weak, these Asian markets, and then picked up quite well. Same thing with Hong Kong and the Chinese H-share index. But, of course, we know that they are tethered to the Wall Street leash effect. And the European markets today were quite weak for the most part. They had rallied a bit and then lost those gains as U.S. futures weakened and Wall Street was fairly soft early on, although as we're coming up with about 17 minutes to go before the close, Wall Street's declines are rather modest, but this can swing all over the place, as you know. I'll try to pick it up before I sign off in terms of that close. So a choppy week overall, but one of the aspects was that at the beginning of the week, some of the European markets were just testing and nudging fractionally above their early February highs. Well, they've backed right away from those levels, whereas the Asian markets, which such as India, which had weakened a bit last week, have picked up in here this week, just emphasizing the point I just made. Long-dated government bonds have been weak for the most part. Now, it depends what you look at in terms of the big action. Australian bond prices are right back down onto the lows that they saw last year. And that's because Australia remains quite a vibrant economy. Now, in Europe and North America and also in Japan, we of course had that very big bond market rally starting last June, I believe. And we also had that acceleration upwards I'm talking too much about these bonds, that acceleration upwards last month with accelerated peaks occurring in bond prices in those countries I mentioned on the same day that stock markets had those accelerated lows. Now, the European bonds and the North American bonds have eased in here this week, particularly the U.S. Treasuries, although they're all up a bit in here today against the background of weaker stock markets. Now, in currencies, we've got the dollar continuing the downward drift that we've seen really all week. The U.S. dollar index, though, is right about in the middle of its trading range at 76.04, although I believe it broke downwards today against a couple of some of the Asian currencies, including the strong Singapore dollar, broke down to a new low, that is. And precious metals, well, my goodness, it's been the dramatic story of platinum, which has had another barnstorming week. Actually, it's the biggest week and of its gains, and it's up $78 in here today. So becoming climactic. More on that later. We've had ranging in the gold and silver markets. Palladium's been fairly firm. Every time, more on those later as well. Just run through the review. Oil's had a good week, currently 95.64. Natural gas has also been quite firm in the last week, although it's given up a little bit of those gains in here today. The grain and bean complex has come roaring back following some ranging and declines that we saw last week. Now, this move is being led by soybeans, with corn closing in as well. Wheat had been the more overextended of the contracts previously. And industrial metals, it's been quiet for the most part, although copper has been firm, and so has aluminium. Aluminium probably had the best of the gains. The others continue to range. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, this is the great debate, or the great debate carries on here, with a majority of people feeling that stock markets are just in a kind of a lull, a little technical rally, before they go plunging down again because of the horrendous stories emanating from the banks and the bank-related related problems. And indeed, those are dramatic stories. And well, I can't wait for Hollywood to produce the movies. They're bound to be interesting. And folks, for years to come now, the bankers will be big villains everywhere you look. You know, every action film will have a dodgy banker there behind the scenes. No offense to bankers. Bankers listening, but you can understand why here. Now, there are other people who say, well, wait a minute, this has all been discounted before. We've seen banks go bust before, and of course governments don't allow them to go completely bust. And a lot of criticism on the banking industry saying that it can hold governments and economies to ransom. Tim Price has produced some terrific copy on this, which I'll be posting when I complete today's update. Talking about the banks being very good at privatizing their profits when they make them and socializing their losses. In other words, getting rescued by governments, which is, say, are held to ransom by all the various problems. So, among the well, the bears are in the majority, certainly in the West, and Asian investors had taken fright in recent weeks and months, looking on appalled at what was taking place in the Western financial industry. But then there are others who say, again, we've seen these crises before, we've had the worst of it, and yes, there's going to be a lot of nasty news and disclosures to come, but governments have been galvanized into action. And anyway, we don't we know that the Western banks no longer represent the world. Now, I have a lot of sympathy with that view and have been advocating it. In fact, I think it's probably a better than 50-50 chance that the low that we saw on the 22nd of January was very important indeed. In other words, it marked at least the beginning of the bottoming out process for a number of these stock markets. And I think it would be prudent not to expect, in terms of expectations, not to look for dramatic recoveries. The world isn't going to snap back to normal all of a sudden. The financial damage that's been caused by this banking situation is certainly going to linger for quite a long time. But we don't want to look at the world through bankers' eyes. They're going through their own personal crisis. It's very much an own goal, of course. In other words, self-inflicted wound. But there are economies that are doing extremely well out there. Look at all of Asia. Look at all the Fuller Money themes. Look at all the resources players, emerging countries that are involved in that are major producers of commodities. Look at the whole global infrastructure boom. Look at Asia's emerging markets. I mean, there are so many bullish stories out there. And if you want to see good banks, look at Indian banks, for instance. So there are a lot of very interesting stories out there. And even in Europe and in North America, there are plenty of companies which are selling on quite attractive valuations. And sure, earnings are going to be down for a number of them, although not all of them. Again, go back to the Fuller Money theme. Those miners are doing exceptionally well on their earnings. And they've also got pricing power too. Just watch for the settlement of this current long discussion with China regarding iron ore contracts. China does not have the upper hand in that, needless to say. So, a point I want to emphasize is that there are a lot of companies that are really doing quite well that are selling at very attractive valuations, and that is the real backdrop to stock markets overall. And investors who say, well, I like, or well, I'll invent some dialogue. You say, well, David, I kind of like what you're saying, but this is a bit naive. I read all this stuff every day in the financial pages here. I'd like you to be right, but surely it can't be true. Well, have a look at the item from Cape Town that was posted, the study of how the S&P performs over time. Now, not that many of us are investing heavily in S&P stocks right now, but that doesn't mean that a number of them aren't quite cheap and attractive. But it's that long-term historic performance that I'm really referring to, and how much better is it likely to be for some of the emerging markets and resources markets that are Fuller Money favorites? How much better are their performances likely to be over the next few decades? So I think one needs that big picture perspective in here. Okay, now, interesting situations. Japan. A lot of people have said that the valuations are better than they've been for a long time, and then there's a group of people who say, well, the problems are bigger than they've been for a long time, and there are all sorts of subprime rumors swirling around. I've been an early advocate of the view that the Japanese must have subprime banks, that is, must have some subprime problems. After all, the proverbial Mrs. Watanabe was searching the world for attractive yield, and I find it most unlikely that all those sharks who were selling the various derivative products for all this dodgy debt emanating from the Western banks didn't beat a hasty path to Asia to call on the Japanese. But Japan is looking interesting, in my view. It may well be a slow recovery situation. That's the greatest risk. I don't think the risk is that Japan is going to see any kind of dramatic fall from current levels. It's already seen a big fall. What I don't see yet is the leadership on the upside. That could change fairly quickly, given some good action. And I'm watching that second section index that I posted. If I didn't post it yesterday, it was the day before. Watching the bank's index, of course. So I do think that there's real value down here. It's just the question is, and real recovery potential for Japan. It's just a matter of how much longer or how much time will be spent in ranging base formation development overall. Now, Quick word on that item that I posted yesterday regarding those four cycles of stock markets. Best case scenario in here is that we get stock markets ranging upwards above or putting some distance between current levels and those January lows. I don't, again, I've said I don't expect dramatic rapid recoveries, and where we do see pretty brisk recoveries, as in Indonesia, for instance, riding the crest of that palm oil boom. Don't be surprised, and they're also oil exporters, of course, crude oil, that is. Don't be surprised if markets that show that type of strength also encounter resistance near their highs and range for quite a while. So, ranging is the most likely outcome for a good many of these markets, but will it be with an upward bias or a downward bias? I think it'll be with an upward bias for the fuller money themes, and it would take another dramatic meltdown by Wall Street to reverse that prospect. But even in that event, and I'm not predicting that, but even in that event, I think that the fuller money themes, yes, they can get stabs on the downside. That goes with the territory. We didn't need to have this banking crisis to see that. It has happened several times during all those wonderful years of gains that we saw starting in 2003. But they tend to snap back very quickly. And when I look at the Fuller Money portfolio, and I beg your pardon, my personal long-term portfolio, in terms of the top 10 positions by weighting, yes, there was a lot of profit erosion up through the 22nd of January, but then so many of them bounced back so very strongly, led by Rio Tinto and the MLW gold shares. Well, they never came down that much, the gold funds, so on. Okay. Moving on here, what about these long-dated government bonds? Well, I've been saying that they were an inverse mirror image of what we were seeing with global stock markets. I think I've maintained that the yields were absurd at these levels. They were discounting, well, global depression, Armageddon. There's not a whole lot of difference between global depression and Armageddon, I suspect. Except the temperature might be higher with Armageddon, and the only way I could see those yields holding up, I beg your pardon, the only way I could, let me start that again, the only way I could see the yield staying so very low, remember those US 10-year bonds got down to, I think, 3.3 on their yields. In other words, lower than the rate of inflation. And the only way I could see those yields staying so low, or bond prices, those long-dated government bond prices staying so high, was if we had either a global recession. I regard that as well, there's never a nil possibility, but I think it would take some kind of horrific exogenous event that I'm certainly not predicting, that's unknown today, to cause that to happen. In other words, I certainly don't think it's going to be the Western banking crisis that would cause that to happen. I think the Western banking crisis, at the very worst, will push the U.S. and the U.K. into recession, and that might actually be just marginally avoided, but certainly there's a steep slowdown in those regions. But the point I'm trying to make on these long-dated government bonds is that they were priced for disaster, and I think that I've said all along that the moment stock markets steadied and confidence began to return in terms of global GDP growth, then people would conclude quite rightly that the yields were lousy and that the inflation risks were going to gobble up any gains that they'd actually seen, and we would see those prices weaken. Well, I referred to the Australian long-dated government bond prices. I'll be posting those shortly, along with those for the UK, Euroland, the US, and Japan. And I'm content to continue to build up of short positions in that area. I'm not going to be too aggressive, but I can predict what will happen in the sense of two scenarios. If the stock market bears, the stock market bears, if they're right, then I will get stopped out and I'll be lucky if I break even in terms of my long-dated government bond shorts, because they will rally back up again in the flight to so-called quality, although that's quality with inverted commas around it, because I don't think it represents quality at all, as you would gather from what I've been saying. Conversely, if stock markets hold steady and with some of the fuller money themes pushing up to new high ground, confidence returning in the global in terms of the global economy and GDP growth, then I think we'll see those yields continue to come down, because there is certainly some inflation for them to worry about. Not wage price inflation so much. There's not a great deal of that, and I don't think we will see much of that, but there's a lot of food price inflation, and it doesn't look like that's going to go away anytime soon. More on that in a moment. So, again, the bond market will be taking its cue from what happens with global stock markets. But if you're an optimist on global stock markets, and what would an optimist mean? What would it be an optimist view? Well, that we would hold above those 22nd January lows and see markets range sideways and then eventually higher, then we're going to see some big moves downwards in long-dated government bond prices, and that will be good news for shareholders. Investors who want to hold bonds might look for opportunities in some of the better quality corporates, and then of course they're the inflation linked bonds, the TIPS, which would offer some respite. Okay, what about currencies in here? Again, I maintain that the U.S. interest rate picture is bearish for the U.S. dollar. As I said in an earlier broadcast, that's not something that the market fully discounts and then forgets about, because the moment you put on a currency position, if for instance, a number of people have been asking me about the dollar versus the euro, and they have been expecting the euro to weaken and perhaps the dollar to strengthen against the euro. Well, maybe it will, maybe it won't, but if it's while it's in a trading range, that interest rate differential will, while not excessive, will gradually be eating, will be steadily be eating away at one's position in a ranging market. And if you have if you try to buy the US dollar against the Australian dollar or the New Zealand dollar, you're getting absolutely caned by the interest rate differential. So interest rate differentials are the hard fundamentals of the currency markets, and the point I'm making is that they are decidedly negative for the US dollar against everything but the Japanese yen in terms of major currencies. And also, everybody knows that the Fed is going to go on producing as many dollars as it needs to keep a weak economy afloat in here. So I just think that's a bearish story overall, and that the dollar will range sideways at very best. The best value currencies are the Asian currencies. They are arguably undervalued, and particularly the developing country Asian currencies, not least the renminbi. But there's no way that we can borrow that effective or buy that into that effectively, as it's not a freely traded currency, and the various systems that have been set up by Evergreen and some other organizations for participating in the renminbi are, put it this way, they're priced for the people who are marketing those structures, not for the people who might consider buying them, such as you and me. And I definitely will not be buying any of those structured products. But there are other Asian currencies which I think are certainly going to go on appreciating. The resources currencies, particularly in developed countries, Australia, New Zealand, should really remain quite firm overall. And the sterling, I think sterling is going to weaken a bit further in here. But what weaken against what? It'll weaken against gold. It will weaken against the Asian currencies. It might not weaken all that much against the U.S. dollar. It has been quite weak against the euro over the last many months. Will the euro weakens significantly against the US dollar? I doubt it. I doubt it, partly because of the interest rate differentials, more because the euro has been upgraded in terms of its reserve currency status, even though it's still somewhat of an experimental currency. You can see the appeal. People don't like the US dollar, or they're overweight the US dollar, and so there you have that highly liquid euro. They're afraid of the yen because, first, it doesn't yield anything, and then Japan's economy has disappointed for so long, although it's doing rather better than most people had forecast currently. Moving on to the commodity markets. Again, all of these resources remain in secular bull markets. The ones making the headlines right now are the foods. This is a crowded trade, therefore it's becoming more risky, but I don't think it's over. The fundamentals of supply are tight. In other words, there's just not that much of the stuff around, and yes, farmers will grow as much as they possibly can, but it's not with crops. It's speculative. It's never guaranteed. The farmers. Relevant digression. The farmers are the biggest speculators of all because they plan something not being certain that it's going to grow, and due to weather conditions or diseases. And if it grows, they're not absolutely certain that they'll be able to bring in a good harvest due to other weather-related problems or pest problems or disease problems. And if they sell the stuff, or if they harvest the stuff, rather, it used to be a case that they had an uncertain price future. Well, they no longer have the uncertain price futures. Farmers are on a roll. As long as they can produce the stuff, they're going to get a very good price for it, and so they will try to increase supplies. But problems regarding the amount of arable land, the costs of fertilizers, the costs of water, or the availability of water, even do restrict that production somewhat. And the demand for these products continues to grow at a faster rate than the supply. And if anything goes wrong with the supply chain in terms of negative impact on some of the bigger crops, We haven't seen this for a while, but if, for instance, if Brazil had a bad soybean crop or the US had a bad corn crop, again, this hasn't happened for a number of years, but we can't assume that the crop yields will always be good. And we saw the ructions caused by the weak Australian wheat harvest, or the poor Australian wheat harvest last year. So this is very much a bull market here, but as I've emphasized, it is a bit of a crowded trade. There's a lot of speculation going on there. That doesn't mean that it isn't worth playing, but it means that the risks are high and one has to use disciplined trend running tactics if participating in that sector, and it's best not to be too aggressive. They are getting the sort of moves that we saw in many of the industrial metals a couple of years ago and even part of last year. A lot of those industrial metals are much cheaper now, and they may stay quiet for a while longer because of concerns over global GDP growth. But I maintain that these are in secular bull markets and that the big potential is all on the upside. Zinc is in that category, support building, so is nickel, and so is aluminium, and aluminium has begun to move. And copper, which people thought was dead and buried, many obituaries had been written for copper, that has been pushing steadily higher in here, as you probably realize or can quickly see in the chart library. So this is a area of likely further strength this year. And that won't do the miners any harm, and it will create speculative trading opportunities in the actual metals themselves, in the futures, in other words. Precious metals, I've described the medium-term trend as becoming mature or in a mature phase, very mature phase, I think, for platinum. I think in terms of time, we're very close to a high in that platinum market. We haven't seen it yet. Maybe there's one more dramatic spasm on the upside, but this has been an extraordinary move in platinum. We're nowhere near as overextended on the upside in the other metals, but again, I make my point that it is a maturing medium-term cycle within the long-term bull market. That doesn't mean that one needs to jump out. People who are holding unleveraged positions in gold, I don't think they really need to worry at all if they don't mind riding out a bit of a medium-term correction. And I think it's probably too soon to sell in anticipation of that medium-term correction. But I wouldn't be too aggressive here, particularly in terms of the future. Still worth playing, but again, with disciplined trend-running tactics. And what about the energy side? Well, natural gas is strengthening after a long, long period of underperformance. And I think prices of crude oil will remain relatively firm here, even though that run-up to 100 was overextended. We saw a steepening trend. And I described it as a medium-term correction. A medium-term correction is anything in our book, at Fuller Money, medium-term correction is anything from several weeks to a couple of years. It's seldom more than that. I don't think we'll see the oil prices ranging in a corrective phase for that long, although it wouldn't be impossible, but a few more weeks, and then I wouldn't be surprised as confidence picks up again in global GDP growth. I think stockpiling and speculative demand will push prices back up to have another look at that $100 level at least. And I think that's it, folks, for another week. It's been an interesting one. Well, they're all pretty well interesting, aren't they? In terms of money-making opportunities, well, you know, we can only, you and I can only deal with the opportunities that markets provide. Many of you are, of course, longer term, medium to longer term investors in stock markets, and one got used to making some quite impressive profits during 2003, well into 2007, and so this probably feels like a bit of stressful purgatory here. Just to see these markets ranging and all these bearish forecasts coming out. I don't think rapid juggling of the portfolio will improve the odds much at this stage. I think markets are closer to a buying area than a selling area, but they may continue to range, as I said before, for some time in here. As a consequence of that, well, again, the world's your oyster in terms of investment opportunities. There are so many markets out there. I find for myself, in terms of looking for profits, well, it's been very much a matter of trawling in the streams and eddies of other markets, with some positions in precious metals, with some positions in some of the agricultural commodities, shorting bonds, in terms of stock market indices, operating as my own little mini plunge protection team. When they hammer some of my favorite areas down, then I have stepped in for trades, trying n not taking huge positions in anything, but trying to play the volatility a little bit. That's not for everyone. Those who don't trade shouldn't be perhaps trying to trade at this stage, as I've often mentioned. Many of you who do trade, though, you know where those areas of opportunity lie. Just watch your money control, discipline overall. And now I really will wrap up and say just have a fabulous weekend, which is exactly what I intend to do. All the best.